Blog Talk Radio.
My God, what's happening to our country? I turn on the TV or the radio. There are more Paul Revere's sounding the alarm. The communists are coming. The country is going communist right before your eyes and you don't even know it. You are walking Manchurian candidates. You're going to have nothing left. And by the next generation, no two Americans will speak the same language. We're being turned into a Tower of Babel. And the government is being run by the Babelettes. There's a handful of spirited citizens that are showing up at town halls to say they don't like what's going on, and they're being stomped down by the Tonton Macoutes. Yeah, the only one who hasn't been appointed as a czar is Doc Duvalier. They're going to start bringing in the voodoo people from Haiti. Well, nation is going down the tubes, man. I turn on Michael Medved. I mean, there's a guy, he's soft-spoken, he's sweet, he's charitable, he's kind to his listeners. And he's losing it because some schmuck called up and wants to legalize weed. And he said, well, what about heroin? He said, no, you can't legalize heroin. So where do you draw the line? You know where you draw the line? Where you mark the needle. That's where you draw the line. You legalize weed. If you think you got problems now, let me tell you something. Wait till a cop blows smoke in your face. And he's smoking weed. Yeah. Oh, you don't think that can't happen? In America? Anything can happen. We kill presidents. Anything, it can happen. We are the seeds of our own destruction. Actually, they're experimenting with monkeys. They got they're doing cell experimentation with monkeys. And you know who's next, don't you? Cheetah? Yeah, somebody's going to talk you into having your kid experimented with. Listen, it's only one. You've got more. This government is run amok. We got to break them. We got to break this government. We got to break the spell. We got to get Dorothy's red shoes back. We're in trouble. And I want to tell you something about, I'll give you a little Russian history. Once upon a time, there was a czar, and he ruled Russia. And the last czar, his name was Nicholas. And I'm trying to think of the Nicholas Romanov. And he had a couple of daughters. He might have had three daughters, and he had a son. His son was a hemophiliac. And he was a decent guy, but his time was up. Because there were a couple of madmen who were plotting make everybody equal. And so what they did is they identified themselves as the Red Russians, and the Tsar was defended by the White Russian. So there was the Red Army and the White Army. And eventually the Red Army destroyed the White Army, and then they took the Tsar and his family and they put him in a basement in a palace. And one night when nobody was paying attention, they went down to the basement and they gunned them all down. Men, women, and children. And they killed every last Romanov. And then they threw their bodies down a mine shaft. And that's the birth of communism. That's how communism was born. It was born in bloodshed. And to this day, it will die in bloodshed. And only this time, it's going to be your blood. You're not getting off the hook. You're losing your country. And there will be a handful of people who stand up and fight to take it back. And you're going to get dragged into the mess. So you can do it one of two ways. You can go to the ballot and break up this monopoly on the new communist government. Or you can wait until there's a knock on your door and you have to declare who you're for. And don't think that can't happen. This is the land of revolution. 25% of the American population in colonial times beat the British. And they had 75% of the country against them. And they were called revolutionaries. And they were named like guys named George Washington, Ben Franklin, Thomas Paine, Nathan Hale, who I think went to Yale, and now that's a communist university. And we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. There is a takeover in this country, and you don't know it. And all of these communist groups that have been operating as factions are now uniting for the final push to take this country over. And you're going to sit there and watch TV. Well, let me tell you something. You won't be allowed to watch what you want to watch because your government is getting ready to take over the internet. They're going to seize internet power, and you will be totally brainwashed. You'll get take your car to the car wash, and you'll have to go next door to the government brainwashing department. And while your car is getting soaped up, you will be shampooed. And you won't know it until it's too late when you wake up in the middle of the night screaming and feeling behind your left ear seeing a drain plug that's leaking. We're in trouble. So while I have, while I still have the power to get my message out, okay, and you know what? The conservatives are making a big mistake. They didn't stand up for Savage. They're making believe he's not there. And one of them will be next after Savage. And then they're going to come together, but it'll be too late. Because the fight, this government came into power six months ago, and they rammed through everything that they needed to control the nation. We are now, we're almost sedated. The only thing, once they legalize weed, the heroin, then you'll be able to get your shot a day to keep you under control. They hate the military. They're going to destroy the military. Watch this war in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda knows we're weak. Al-Qaeda knows there's no George Bush. Okay? And whatever you think about George Bush, God forbid the day may come when you're going to wish he was back. And you'll be crying, "Come back, Bush." You don't think so, right? Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. The top three guys that ran the war against Al-Qaeda were Bush, Cheney, and the Rumsfeld Marshall. And all three did a good job. But you don't know that. Because you were told by the communist media that we were losing, we were losing, we were losing. Now, we're losing, and they're not saying anything. Now, why is that? How come the same people that chanted, "When is Bush going to get bin Laden?" are now chanting, "When is Chairman Obama going to get the CIA?" You think about that. And I'm telling you, you keep an eye on the body count in Afghanistan and Iraq. You keep a good eye on that body count. Because if it starts to get out of hand, you will have a revolution in this country. Americans, real Americans, are not going to let this party of death bleed the American soldier on the battlefield. They're not going to let them be betrayed. They will call for the heads of everybody who's involved. And speaking of heads, the guy that should lose his tonight, literally. I hope I said that right. The guy that should lose his head tonight is Rockefeller. Jay Rockefeller. He is a Grey Poupon communist. He bought his own state, just like Corzine bought New Jersey. And he has done more damage. He votes to burn the flag. He votes to kill kids. He's real scum. As a matter of fact, if you look up scum in a dictionary, his picture's there. Now, having said that, let me brighten you up with a little music. And when we come back, we'll talk about the communist takeover of the United States and how we're being sold out six ways to Sunday. In the meantime, let me jazz you up. Thank you. That's Count Basie from Red Bank, New Jersey. How do you like that, right? It wasn't that talent, putting that orchestra together, writing the arrangements so that those trumpets come in on cue. Huh? You hear that nice chop as they introduce other musical instruments? Fantastic. Now what do you got today? You got guys, they can't even wear their hats right. They got their pants hanging down. They got crack where the crack is. And they call themselves, and they're getting paid millions of dollars, and they're all flocking to it. There's more money in rap music than there is in drugs, yet the two go together. Isn't it great? Isn't it fantastic? Yeah. And that's why people are flying into this country to take their place in the workforce, because one day when the fit hits the shan and they're all out of work, they'll be T-boys for a Pashtun. Pashtun will be sitting in the big desk, and underneath he'll have a little button, and he'll press the button, and the rapping T-boy will come in, and Pashtun will have a shy stakana. Yeah, they were up and running for 250 years, and then they just folded like a cheap suit. They folded like a Persian rug. You know, a good Persian rug folds. You know that, right? You can put it in a suitcase. 9x12, you can fold it up and put it in a suitcase. That's the mark of a good Persian rug. But we're not going to have to worry about Persian rugs, because very soon there's going to be no Persia. If you think the Israelis are going to let Ahmadinejad and the women pinching mullahs get a nuke so that they can destroy both Israel and Palestine, you're crazy. You're going to watch a big glow in the sky, and it's going to be gone. Either that, or move over Adolf Hitler. You're about to be topped. Yeah, but that's not our worry. What we have to worry about, who's in the American League? Who's coming up to bat next week? You want to know who's coming up to bat? You know, I started to tell you about the Tsar, right? And how the Tsar got wiped out. Okay? And so, to me, when I hear somebody say Tsar, that gets me very nervous. I don't like the word Tsar. When they appointed a drug czar during the Say No to Drugs at the Betty Ford Clinic, I knew we were in trouble. When I saw a general, pipe-smoking general, say he was going to be the drug czar, I knew that there was going to be more drugs coming across the border than ever before. And the reason that it's not being stopped is it's too much income for your House and your Senate. They're all getting drug money. If you don't believe me, ask Hillary Clinton. She got $450,000 large from the Vignali drug family. And then when she got caught, she sent back $400,000. She kept $50,000 for expenses. And this government let her off the hook. As a matter of fact, they nominated her for the presidency. Yeah. How's that? Yeah, I could see it now. We'll all be singing Come On Baby. They'll change the national anthem to Come On Baby, Light My Fire. Yeah. Unbelievable. What a nation. So, Obama is appointing people that don't have to answer to anybody but him, comrade. And they're called czars. And he's got like 40 of them that we know about. This, right? And I call them commie czars because they're all communists. And Fidel Castro will be Pope of Washington, D.C. very soon. He'll be buried. They'll have a bigger funeral for him in Washington. He'll be laid in state than they're going to have for Jumbo. Yeah, Jumbo. They're calling him the Lion of the Senate. They're spelling it wrong. It's L-I-A-R. And I'll tell you a little story about a girl who never got her day in court. And this girl was an impressionable intern. Okay? And she was at a party with Fat Boy. And Fat Boy got his load on, among other things. And he gave her a ride home, so they say. And he was crossing a bridge over a pond that was 9 feet deep. I think at high tide. and he went off the bridge. And he managed to get out. As drunk and fat as he was, he managed to get out. Well, he wasn't that fat at the time. And he turned into Charles Lawton later on. And they say that the girl was trapped in the back seat of the car for at least 2 hours, with 2 hours of air. And what did the lion of the Senate do? The sea lion of the Senate? Did he go to the nearest house, nearest bungalow, and bang on the door and ask for help? Did he take a garden hose that was hanging outside the nearest house and run back to the tidal pond known as Chappaquiddick and run it in the window until so that the girl would have air to breathe as he stood on the roof of the car? No, he was too drunk. That's what they say. He wasn't drunk. He wasn't that drunk. He was sober enough to get out himself. And then he tried to cover it up. And he asked a cousin to take the blame. All right? And that's the lion of the Senate. How's that? Isn't that great? And now they're going to eulogize him. And they're going to tell us how great he was. Yeah. Well, you know who else had was laid in state? Stalin and Mao Zedong. They were laid in state, too. So don't tell me about the wonders of Ted Kennedy. And Ariana Huffy Puffy said he passed the torch to us. Yeah, he's going to be passing a lot of torches. Yeah, he's going to be passing a lot of torches. And the smoking lamp is lit. We are so brainwashed, it's unbelievable how the media can force feed us. We're like the pate geese, the ones that are in the crate with their heads sticking up and are force fed all the communist propaganda. Friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your ears. I come not to bury Jumbo, but to praise him. The evil that men do oft lived after them. So be it with Jumbo. Don't tell me this guy was a patriot and a saint. Please. Please. He married a beautiful woman. And he turned her into an alcoholic. Yeah. Don't get me started. It's not my role to criticize the evil that men do. But let me tell you something. I can't stand it when they praise a rat. The only thing you can say about him is he stopped gnawing the Constitution. Oh, by the way, I got to tell you, we got to get rid of all of them. If I said it enough times yet that it's sinking in, we got to get rid of all of the Democrats and all of the Republicans that are presently in office. We got to flush the toilet one big pull on the chain. Olympia Snowe was with Jay Rockefeller when they introduced the bill to seize the internet from the American people under the guise of security. Okay? And you were worried about Bush's Patriot Act. You know what? You're going to beg for Bush to come back. We're going to have to give Bush a third term. Bush, come back. Bring Cheney and the Rumsfeld Marshall. Did anybody ever show you the list of charges against Rumsfeld and all his failures? Did anybody ever give you a list? All you ever heard about Rumsfeld was he's not the right guy for the job. You never heard one reason why he wasn't the right guy for the job. Cheney, what did you ever hear about Cheney? He's with Big Oil. Yeah, he has 3 quarts of 10W-40 in his trunk. Yeah, it's all right. Cheney can't be with Big Oil because he's stealing. But Clinton could be with Big Drugs, and he could steal all he wants. He could get an LBJ and a golden saxophone at the same time. Yeah. Wonderful, isn't it? Yeah, and what the president does in the privacy of the Oval Office is nobody's business, especially if his lawyer is present. Unbelievable. We have become suckers ad infinitum. Classic suckers. Well, you see, the best way to do it is you keep everybody drugged. and then you take over the country. And if you can't use a Trojan horse, just get a big condom and everybody can come out of the condom. Tell the truth, wouldn't you like to see Bush, a Cheney, and a Rumsfeld Marshall wearing six guns and show up at the White House and call out Obama and Eric Holder and what's his name? Elijah Mohammed. And Gaddafi, Muammar Gaddafi. Wouldn't you like to see that? Wouldn't you like to see a gunfight?
Okay. Final stand, okay, correct. Oh, my dearest one, must I lay down my gun or take the chance of losing you forever? Duty calls, my back's against the wall. Have you no kind word to say before I ride away? Fired at OK Corral. If the Lord is my friend, we'll meet at the end of the gunfight at OK Corral. Gunfight at OK Corral. Boot Hill, Boot Hill, so cold, so still. Killers that died in the gunfight at OK Corral. OK
take you now to a stakeout outside of Burger King, where under the new Chairman Obama administration of there's a watch for fat kids, and it looks like the stakeout is about to go live. Hello, Charlie? Yeah, okay, you ready to make the move? Yeah, I'm ready. Okay, you see that 11-year-old, looks about 250 pounds? He's mine. Son? Son, come here. Yeah? How old are you, son? I'm 11. How many pounds do you weigh, son? I'm about 55 pounds. Son, you're 255 pounds. Would you get on a scale, please? You know, what's that behind your back? It's a cheeseburger. Son, you're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. Somebody read him the rest of his merengue rights.
Para aquellos que se quejan tanto, para aquellos que solo critican, para aquellos que usan las armas, para aquellos que nos contaminan, para aquellos que hacen la guerra, para aquellos que viven pecando, para aquellos que nos maltratan, para aquellos que nos contagian.
Huh? Hi, you boys and girls. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party Book.com. Suicide bomber killed 241 American troops 25 years ago in barracks. October the 23rd, 2008. In the green expanse of Arlington Cemetery's Section 59, a Lebanese cedar tree grows near the final resting place of some of the first Americans to shed blood in the fight against Middle East terrorism. So this article was written about the tragedy in Beirut, and it was written on October the 23rd, 2008. And I found it on the web, and I wanted to continue after reading All the Dead at Lockerbie from Flight 103, who were murdered by Muslim terrorists. I wanted to read the roster of the 241 Americans who died. Former Navy journalist Joe Chiokin of Poway was sleeping next door to the Marine barracks in Beirut, Lebanon. They were hit by a suicide bomber 25 years ago today, so the anniversary is the 23rd of October. That's 12 days and a month after September the 11th. 25 years ago today, a suicide bomber, so now it's coming up on 26 years ago. A suicide bomber steered a truck loaded with the equivalent of 6 tons of TNT. 6 tons. That's 12,000 pounds of TNT. Unless they're doing metric tons, then it's 13,200. Down the airport road in Beirut, Lebanon, he plowed into the four-story barracks where more than 300 U.S. troops from a U.N. peacekeeping mission slept. I got to tell you, we should have nothing to do with the U.N. whatsoever. First off, they don't fight, and secondly, they leave you to die. You'll get killed in a UN mission. Stay away from the UN. As they slept, the bomb detonated what the FBI called the largest non-nuclear bomb in history. The explosion and fireball pulverized the concrete fortress, killing 241 U.S. service members, most of them Marines. A second blast minutes later at the compound of the French peacekeeping force killed 58 more Western troops. 3 months later, President Ronald Reagan pulled the Americans out of Beirut. A quarter of a century and two wars with Iraq have dulled the public's memory of the Beirut attack. But the United States and its allies, please friends, don't use the words allies. We have no allies. Absolutely not. We have friends in need when they're in need. So the United States and its allies feel the effects, said retired Marine Colonel Tim Geraghty, who commanded U.S. forces in Lebanon at the time. The one thing that bothers me about this peacekeeping force, and I don't know if it's true or not, but if it is, it's a disgrace, and that's that the road guards were not armed. They didn't have loaded weapons. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that's what the rumor was at the time. A splinter group of the Iranian and Syrian-supported Hezbollah organization carried out the attack. The Syrians are the biggest bomb makers and deliverers in the world. And Nancy Pelosi and Kami Kucinich went to Syria along with Senator Nelson in an American military plane, landed in Damascus, and licked the ankles of a murderer while Bush was trying to fight terrorism in Iraq. You talk about traitors. These people should have been put up against the wall in Beirut. They should have been traded for Buckley, who was tortured to death. A splinter group of the Iranian and Syrian-supported Hezbollah organization carried out the attack, which allegedly was planned by a man who later inspired Osama bin Laden. Then a tiny guerrilla outfit, Hezbollah has grown into a political and military force in Lebanon. Most of the 1,500-man Marine Expeditionary Force was bunkered in a four-story concrete building. 241 died. 220 were Marines, 18 were Navy, and 3 were Army. It was the largest single-day loss of life for Marines since the World War II Battle of Iwo Jima. And from this, bin Laden got the courage to come visit us twice in New York. He was inspired when he saw them run. Cut your losses is what I'm sure Reagan was told. Get out. But he didn't leave a kiss goodbye. A nearly simultaneous explosion nearby killed 58 French soldiers. One of two alleged plotters, listen to the name, Imad Mughniya, was killed by a car bomb in Syria on February the 12th of 2008, a rocket launcher. At least, not only one. 10 guys with rocket launchers. And ultimately to the U.S. war dead from Iraq and Afghanistan. The Iraq war dead is around 4,600 right now, and the Obama administration is now tying the hands of the CIA. They're purging the CIA, and they're building a militia. The Tonton Macoute militia in the United States. They're recruiting communist students, and your child is probably one of them. There's another civil war coming in this country. We're split down the middle, and I got to tell you, as a matter of fact, we're not split down the middle. We're outnumbered 53-47%. And when that 47% knows that everything they have is gone, there's going to be hell to pay. There's going to be hell to pay. You can have all the peace demonstrations you want. There's going to be hell to pay. And wait till you go to these town hall meetings and there's lynch mobs. And every other topic is we got to stop this vigilante terrorism. Yeah, that's how they'll label a fight back to take your country back. Yeah, and Bush termed it vigilante, gave us the buzzword vigilante, brought it back from the dead. Who would have thought that 25 years later, here we are fighting essentially the same crowd, says Garrity, who lives in Phoenix. The enemy learned terrorism works. Joe Achiacon, now 69 and living in Poway, I don't know where Poway is, was a Navy senior chief at the time, the highest ranking of 128 enlisted sailors who worked alongside the Marines in Beirut. A Navy journalist. He was in charge of the tiny television and radio detachment. It still frustrates him that the two-year mission ended in death and failure. We invested all this time and money and sweat and blood, and then we just leave, Chiokan said. Why did we give these lives? Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. The Beirut mission started out as an effort to stabilize a fragile peace in a war-torn country. Lebanon had been in turmoil since the Palestinian liberation, having been expelled from Jordan. Here you go again. I'm telling you, these Palestinians are persona non grata in their own Muslim world. Nobody wants them. I was in Kuwait, and they were pulling them out of cars and taking them to the airport, seizing their homes, seizing their businesses. The Kuwaitis wanted every Palestinian out. I jumped in a car. The Kuwaiti taxi cabs are red Chevy Caprices. A buddy of mine who was Lebanese, okay? We jumped in what we thought was a taxi, and we got in it, and the guy had an AK-47 covered by a headscarf, and he had a Koran on the dash. And my buddy said to him, what are you, hunting Iraqis? He says, no, I'm hunting Palestinians. Okay? So we invested all this time and money and sweat and blood, and then we just leave, Gio Kokin said. Why do we give these lives? And the Beirut mission started out in an effort to stabilize a fragile peace in a war-torn country. And we've been in Lebanon since the 50s. I grew up with guys who were in Lebanon when Eisenhower sent them there. Lebanon has been in turmoil since the Palestinian Liberation Organization, having been expelled from Jordan, Kuwait, and Tunisia. Took refuge there in the 70s. In 1975, a panoply of Christian and Muslim militias, some backed by neighboring powers such as Iran, Syria, and Israel, turned what had been a Middle East oasis into a no-man's land of urban warfare. It was the most modern city in the Middle East. It was known as the Paris of the Middle East. It was a banking center for the entire Middle East. And these Muslim terrorists, these bad Muslims, they turned it into rubble. And they dreamed to do the same thing to New York. And they turned what was a Middle East oasis into a no man's land. Israel invaded in 1982, hoping to crush the PLO in exchange for an Israeli withdrawal. The UN sent in peacekeeping force made up of troops from Great Britain, France, Italy, and the United States. And we all know the story about the hijacking of the Achille Lauro and the murder of Leon Klinghoffer, who was shot in a wheelchair and thrown overboard. And when an American fighter plane forced down a passenger commercial airliner carrying all the terrorists, the Italian government rescued them and at gunpoint against the Americans effected their release on a NATO base in Italy. So don't tell me about allies, please. Don't tell me about allies. And you see that Scotland tonight or this week had turned over the only bomber that was convicted for Flight 103 that put Pan Am out of business, okay? You talk about an economy that's on the rocks, and here's terrorists, they're putting your airlines out of business. They put Pan Am out of business, they put TWA out of business, and on their chalkboard, they've got US Air marked, and they've got American Airlines marked, and that's why they hijacked those two, or was it United? They hijacked United and American Airlines and flew them into the World Trade Center because they like to put American Airlines out of business. U.S. forces set up camp at Beirut International Airport, a spot difficult to defend because the airport remained open for business and because warring factions controlled the strategic hillsides nearby. So we had an ineffective invasion. We couldn't secure high protective ground. And you know what Patton says? Never let the enemy pick the killing ground. You pick the battlefield. It was selected almost entirely for diplomatic and political reasons. The first thing you should do if you're gonna have an action, you have to declare war. None of this. We don't know who the terrorists are. We know who they are. Everybody's got a certificate of origin. Everybody has a mommy and a daddy and a hometown. We know who the terrorists are. Don't give me that crap. We don't know who they are. We know who they are. We know how to find them. And you don't have a police action. You declare war and you win the war. And that's it. If you're not going to declare war, don't bother going. It was selected for almost entirely for diplomatic and political reasons. Garrity said, "I was uneasy from day one that we were in that position." He bunked most of his men, who were from the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, in a sturdy four-story concrete building that had once been the PLO headquarters. The situation fell apart quickly. Military leaders began to view the United States and its allies as favoring the Christian-led forces of the Lebanese government. A car bomb attack at the U.S. Embassy in April of 1983 killed 63 people and emphasized the point that they were going to kill us all. "We walked into the middle of a family feud," Chilkin said, "and they all turned their guns on us." Garrity felt the growing danger in the weeks before the barracks bombing. Artillery shells fell on his compound. You know what this is? Diem Bien Phu. It's a classic Diem Bien Phu. Snipers took pot shots at his men, but Garrity's Pentagon superiors spiked his request for stronger defenses. Do you know what? My son was telling me about Chesty Puller. If he found an officer in the rear, he chased him to the front. Nobody was allowed to be in the rear. And Patton said, "No wise decision was ever made in a swivel chair. Not a battle decision." And that's the problem. All these guys in the Pentagon should be made to go to the front lines. We can always get new Pentagonians. It's hard to replace that private. Garrity felt the growing danger in the weeks before the barracks bombing. Artillery shells fell on his compound. Snipers took pot shots at his men. But the Pentagonians spiked his request for stronger defenses. On October 22nd, 1983, I got to tell you something. I don't buy that. You're the guy that's in charge, and you ask for stronger defenses, and you get turned down. Then you know what you got to do? You got to improvise. You got to make a stronger defenses. You don't say, "Oh, I just got my out. Here's my excuse." Save that piece of paper. On October 22nd, 1983, Chilkin had moved his broadcast detachment from tents next to the barracks to a neighboring building, the Marine Safety Headquarters. Boy, that's a play on words, huh? That night, about midnight, he climbed to the roof of the Marine barracks and he watched the local militias lobbing shells at one another. "It was so cool up there, I was kind of relaxing," Chilkin recalled. "I was thinking about staying up there to sleep, but I went back to my room." Chilkin slept soundly until the blast catapulted him out of his cot at 6:22 a.m. on October the 23rd. "I did a complete cartwheel," he said. "In midair, I grabbed my helmet and my flak jacket." At first, Chilkin thought an artillery shell had struck the building. He raced outside with his roommate, a newly minted Navy chief. The barracks next door had collapsed into rubble. "It looked like a fog, but it was dust from the building," Chilkin said. "I noticed there were a bunch of Marines following me around, covered in dust like zombies. Everyone in the compound scrambled to pull survivors out of the building." Within an hour, Chilkin's superiors told him to organize his broadcast team and get the radio station back on the air. They traded their shovels for cameras and recorded the carnage. 25 years hasn't erased the memories. "You learn to live with it," Chilkin said. "It never gets easier." The Marines' departure brought Beirut no peace. The Civil War raged for 7 more years until a settlement left Syria firmly in control of the country. And my Lebanese friend was reading a paper in Kuwait over coffee, and he said, he looked up from his Arab newspaper and he said, "Tom, your country has sold out my country." Experts believe Imad Mughniyeh played a key role in the twin bombings and went on to mastermind the 1985 hijacking of TWA Flight 847. and a series of kidnappings of Americans in Lebanon. He is believed to have met with bin Laden in Sudan in 1996 and was assassinated in a car bombing in Damascus, Syria, in February, and no one has claimed a responsibility. I'll tell you who didn't do it, the CIA. The CIA definitely didn't do it because they don't know how. And they're so weak that they can't even fend off the Attorney General. Today, Chiokin and Geraghty will join hundreds of other Beirut veterans for a candlelight vigil at Camp Lejeune, near a monument listing the names of all who died. A Marine stands perpetually on guard. The hurt and the sorrow hasn't lessened one iota over the years, Geraghty said. Every day I pray for them, every day. Yes. How sad. How absolutely sad. But you know what? This country doesn't care. This country doesn't want to be drafted. This country wants to go to college on permanent spring break. This country wants drugs, divorce, and abortion. This country wants to kill its old people. They have fancy names for it, like a saving Social Security. This country makes heroes out of villains and worships the golden calf that has been melted down in the form of Oscar statuettes. This country is on the auction block. It doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to them. Them who hate us, who hate the flag, who hate the cross. And they hate the mezuzah too. They hate the flag and they hate anything that's American. And they're going to erase it from your brainwashed mind. And if they can't get you, like the drug man says, he'll get your children. And you will get the tab. Financially and spiritually. Unless you rise up and strike a blow for freedom. Rise up and defend your country. Bugler, sound boots and saddles. In my church, on the wall is an American flag. On that American flag are the names of 47 parishioners who died on 9/11. One of those names is a Marine named Chipura. He was at the Beirut barracks bombing. He survived. The Al-Qaeda got him downtown New York as he ran upstairs to save his fellow Americans. So he has been fighting Al-Qaeda since Beirut, and he finally gave up his life and died for his country on 9/11. Now you think about that while I play a tribute to the 9/11 victims. Of the 241 killed at the Beirut barracks bombing, 21 went to Arlington Cemetery to be buried under a Cedars of Lebanon tree. They were all buried in that one section 59. Nicholas Baker, a corporal, USMC. Alvin Bemmer, a sergeant, USMC. David Doherty, a corporal, USMC. Roy L. Edwards, a sergeant, USMC. Robert B. Greaser, a sergeant, USMC. David M. Green, a corporal, USMC. Maurice E. Ukil, first lieutenant, USMC. James Chardonnay, a nipple, a corporal, USMC. John McCroglou, major, USMC. David J. Naim, I'm sorry, David J. Nern, first lieutenant, USMC. Thomas S. Perron, corporal, USMC. John Arthur Phillips, Jr., sergeant, USMC. Clyde Wayne Plymel, first lieutenant, USMC. Patrick K. Prindeville, sergeant, USMC. Diomedes J. Quirante, HM 3, U.S. Navy. Charles J. Schnorf, 1st Lieutenant, USMC. Thomas A. Ship, Corporal, USMC. Horace R. Stevens, Jr., Private 1st Class, USMC. Eric Glenn Washington, Corporal, USMC. Daniel E. Willett, 1st Lieutenant, USMC. David Edward Worley, HM3, U.S. Navy. The oldest one was born on the 5th of November, 1941. The youngest one, July the 23rd, 1963. God rest their soul. And please avenge them.
My brave lad sleeps in his faded coat of blue. In a lonely grave unknown lies the heart that beats so true. He sank faint and hungry among the famished brave, and they laid him sad and lonely within his nameless grave. No more the bugle calls the weary one. Rest, noble spirit, in thy grave unknown. I'll find you and know you among the good and true. When a robe of white is given for the faded.